Chapter 3. The ambush delays their plans, as everyone except Tong Fan insists they stay to rest one more day before setting off. When they finally leave, it's at a slower pace than they'd planned for, and Tong Fan grits his teeth through the lingering pain as he spends as long as possible in the saddle, before having to brake again. It's easier than having to mount and dismount several times a day, even though he can barely walk by evening. Chinga walks alongside the horses for a stretch of time every day, claiming a need to rebuild her stamina after almost a year of confinement. In the mornings, when Tang Fan wakes with Wu Yin snoring on one side and Sui Zhou's already packed up bedroll on the other, it's to see her standing in the misty light of dawn just outside the campsite, her body moving through a series of poses in a slow, graceful flow of movement. Tang Fan sees Sui Zhou watching as well. Tai Chi, he replies shortly when Tong Fan asks. It's a martial art practice to help the balance of yin and yang. Why don't you do it? Tong Fan asks. I do. Sui Zhou gives him a wry look. You're just usually still in bed when I do.
I mean, here, now, Tong Fan says, with Chinga.
Sui Zhou shakes his head, short and dismissive. You would both probably benefit from being sparring partners, Tong Fan continues, the idea getting legs. I know the dummy at home isn't as useful as the real thing.
Leave it, Run Qing, Sui Zhou says. Please.
Tong Fan blinks at him, surprised. Sui Zhou isn't looking at him, his expression pinched. It occurs to Tong Fan that Sui Zhou is struggling with Qinga's role in Li Zilong's coup, and he resolves to find a way to soften the relationship between them. The mood throughout their party remains somber, however. Sui Zhou isn't the only one prickly to Qinga. Jin San, upon learning that it was Qinga who shot the bolt that injured him during the Imperial Ice investigation, resorts to not speaking to Qinga at all unless absolutely necessary, intent on keeping his role as strictly professional as possible. Deng Er, picking up on the dynamics towards the woman she still considers her friend, seems anxious and torn between her loyalty to Sui Zhou and her desire to spend time with someone who had been dear to her and shares her fond memories of Duarla. And Wu Yin? Though stalwart as ever, the further they travel from the capital, the more withdrawn he becomes. He had left Oirat with Alassi, was joined by Duarla, and is now returning alone. Tong Fan can't begin to imagine what he must be feeling. The pain from Tong Fan's injuries linger with the strain of riding every day, and during the long stretches of monotony, he finds that the memories he would rather forget are always waiting, just below the surface of his mind. Duarla's resigned, sad expression, the only fire flaring in her eyes when she was motivated to save Tong Fan's life, not even her own. The despair of being in Li Zilong's hands, even though he had asked for it, had given himself up, not knowing when death was coming, only that it was inevitable, and that it would be painful. The searing strike of Li Zilong's sword slashing his vulnerable back, just as hope had begun to rise again. And the panicked helpless he'd felt as Eshutamor's men had stolen the Bolong right from in front of him, immobilized by nothing but his own fear as he curled up on the dirty floor. Eshutamor gloating above him, knowing that he had been manipulated, that he had delivered the bombs directly into the enemy's hands himself.
By the end of each day, he's exhausted. The only bright spot is Sui Jo's cooking. Perhaps not as complex as the meals he serves at home, but still just as nourishing for Tang Fan's soul. Deng Er sticks to him in a way she never has before. And while it's a comfort when he's awake, at night his dreaming mind serves up images of her dying in various bloody ways while he stands by and does nothing. One morning he wakes up before even Sui Jo and Qingge, lying awake in the dark and shaking, listening to the deep breathing and snoring coming from all around him, trying to count and identify each one. He hears Sui Jo wake with a choked gasp and shuts his own eyes again as Sui Jo sighs and rises quietly, packing his bedroll away again and stoking the fire to start breakfast. As soon as he hears Qingge rise, Tang Fan extricates himself from his own bedroll, wrapping his cloak tightly around himself and going to her. "Qingge Gunyang," he says, bowing somewhat formally, "I want you to teach me to fight." Her eyebrows shoot up in surprise, and from behind him, Tang Fan can hear Sui Jo's ladle clatter as he drops it in the cast iron pot. "Tang Fan," Qingge starts, clearly searching for words. "You wish to learn kung fu?" Tang Fan presses his lips together, determined and daunted both. "If that is what I have to do, I need to... I can't..." He's rarely at a loss for words. Seeing him struggle, Qingge steps forward to cup her hands under his forearms. Tang Fan looks into her eyes, lowering his voice. "I can't keep relying on others to put themselves in danger on my behalf." Her smile is sympathetic, pained. "If you wish to learn, you should learn," she says. "But I am not convinced I'm the best teacher for you." She points her chin behind him, and Tang Fan looks to where Jin San has risen and is crouched near the fire. He looks up at their attention, eyes narrowing. Qingge lifts her voice a little so he can hear. "Jin Sanya has a style that would suit you well in a tight spot. He's fast, intuitive, and good with a knife at close quarters." Jin San blinks, frowning at them. Tang Fan turns to face him directly and lowers himself in another formal bow. "Jin Sanya, will you be my Laosha?" Jin San gapes for a moment before laughing. "So the scholar wishes to become a fighter," he drawls, grinning. At the opposite side of the fire, Sui Jo is keeping his eyes fixed on the pot in front of him, a bag of rice clutched unopened in his hand. Tang Fan hesitates for a moment before shifting his gaze back to Jin San. "Yes, Laosha," he bobs his head. Jin San leans back, sprawling his legs out and crossing his arms over his chest. "Very well, then. We'll have our first lesson when we break for lunch today. Then, before every meal we have after that."
"Every meal?"
Tang Fan can hear the affront in his own voice. Jin San smirks. "Enjoy breakfast today." When they break for lunch and Tang Fan has heaved his aching limbs off his horse again, he's starting to regret asking. Sui Jo busies himself with putting the food together, but Wu Yin and Deng Er position themselves as audience members. Qingge, at least, is willing to give Tang Fan some dignity. She's moving through her own combat forms on the far side of the carriage. Jin San makes him take off his cloak. "At least you're wearing the right clothes," he says, eyeing Tang Fan critically. "All the skirts and sleeves just get in the way of moving properly. You can always practice in them later once you've got the basics down." Tang Fan looks down at his legs, which look strange and spindly without his usual robes. Still, the simpler outfit is much easier to ride in, even if right now he is very cold. Jin San takes a stance, feet planted wide, one set half a step in front of the other, and hunkers forward a little.
"Stand like this."
Tang Fan imitates his pose. Jin San watches, then huffs unimpressed.
This is gonna take a while.
The lesson is more hands-on than Tang Fan had expected, with Jin San arranging Tang Fan's limbs correctly, prodding his fingers to Tang Fan's belly to show him where to hold strength at his core, and even, at one point, shoving his uninjured shoulder hard to demonstrate the value of a strong stance. They stop when Wu Yin gestures for them to mount their horses again. Tang Fan is surprised to realize that he and Dong Er had been eating while watching, and their entire lunch break had been taken up without him even trying to land a single blow. Sui Zhou hands him some flatbread and dried meat, and Tang Fan swallows down the complaint he was about to make. He eats in the saddle, feeling surprisingly less sore than he had, as if just moving his body around had melted the aches away. And he focuses, as they ride through the afternoon, on keeping the muscles of his abdomen tensed, paying attention to how it changes the way his body moves in the saddle. After they set up camp that evening, while Wu Yin and Sui Zhou are stoking the fire, Jin San challenges Tang Fan to knock him over. And Tang Fan spends the next hour or so learning not only how to stay standing, but where to push, or hit, or kick, where his opponent is weakest. Tang Fan is breathless and almost sweating a little when they finish, and settle around the fire to eat. While he's definitely bone tired, he's also grinning.
Tang Daga, I want to learn to fight,
Dong Er declares. For a moment, Tang Fan's tired mind blanks out at the thought of Dong Er being unbeatable, both in intelligence and combat.
It's too dangerous,
Sui Zhou says shortly, not looking up from his bowl, as he scoops food into his mouth with a methodical focus. Tang Fan frowns.
But Sui Daga, Qingge Gunyang is a woman and she fights,
Dong Er cries.
Think about how much more dangerous it would have been for Tang Daga without her.
Tang Fan sees Sui Zhou's jaw flex.
It's not learning to fight that's dangerous, he says. It's not learning enough. I've seen men in their prime fall due to overconfidence.
Sui Daren, when I was Dong Er's age, I had learnt some basic ways of defending myself,
Qingge interjects softly, her tone immensely reasonable.
Surely that will do more good than harm.
Sui Zhou puts his bowl down.
Forgive me, Qingge, if I don't trust your opinion when it comes to her safety,
he says, then stands and stalks away. Tang Fan gapes after him. Dong Er's face is screwed up in disappointed frustration, but everyone else seems to focus on their meals, heads down. Tang Fan tips the last of his food directly into his mouth and springs to his feet, hurrying after Sui Zhou.
Sui Guangchuan,
he calls as he approaches, seeking to halt Sui Zhou in his steps. It doesn't work, and Tang Fan speeds up to run around and stand in front of him.
There's no need to be so rude.
Sui Zhou's face twitches in its deep scowl.
Tang Fan,
he says, warning.
I understand your feelings, Guangchuan. While we were the only ones in the capital fighting for the Emperor, she was on the other side. But she showed her true loyalties when she saved his life, and she is our best weapon to help Wangxia. She will be loyal to him, I know it. And I know you didn't like him at first either, or Dwarla, or Wu Yin.
Sui Zhou is not walking away, at least. Instead, he's staring at Tang Fan, face twisted in incredulity.
That is not the cause of my misgivings, he says, short and harsh, and tries to sidestep Tang Fan and continue into the darkness, intent on fuming somewhere alone.
Guangchuan Qiong.
Tang Fan lifts his hands to splay his palms on Sui Zhou's chest, stopping him.
Is it something more petty than that?
Sui Zhou looks down at him, face drawn as though he's hurt.
No, it's something far less petty.
Then the Emperor's life?
Sui Zhou reaches up and grasps Tang Fan's wrists, gripping tightly. His hands are so warm. Tang Fan breathes in sharply.
She is careless with your life.
There is a part of Tangfan shocked by Suizhou's words, but the part of his brain that wants to argue facts shoulders it aside. But she saved my life, Tangfan says, his fingers curl against Suizhou's chest, eager to support his point. Countless times. Suizhou shakes his head.
She spared it, maybe, but she was complicit. There were countless times she could have saved you, freed you from Li Zilong, and she did not.
He lowers Tangfan's arms from his chest, then lets go before sighing and turning to walk back towards the camp. Tangfan blinks after him, his own hand loosely circling one of his wrists where it seems to tingle in memory of the pressure. His tongue feels thick in his mouth, blocking up his throat. When Tangfan returns to camp, Suizhou is sitting back in his place at the fireside, unwrapping a paper parcel and offering Dong'ar an osmanthus cake. He must have been hiding them. Tangfan thought they had run out days ago. Tangfan meets Qinga's eyes over the fire, and she looks back at him, pained, before dropping her gaze. She politely refuses a cake as they are passed around the circle. That night, Tangfan lies awake, despite his weariness, unable to close his eyes until he hears Suizhou's steady breathing lengthen into sleep. Then Tangfan rolls over onto his side to face him. Suizhou is turned towards him, blankets and furs tucked tightly, so only the bridge of his nose to his brows is visible. He looks so soft in sleep, unmarred by concerns of waking life. And Tangfan feels a great swell of tenderness expand under his ribs. He wouldn't wish for Suizhou to experience any pain, physical or mental, and the thought of Suizhou feeling it on Tangfan's behalf twists that tenderness into a sharp ache that has him catching his breath. He watches Suizhou until he can't keep his eyes open any longer, and sleep takes him. For the first time on their travels, Tangfan is too weary for nightmares to follow. Dong'ar joins Tangfan and Jin San the next morning, and to Tangfan's great irritation, she exceeds his progress rapidly. "Sui Daga," Dong'ar asks cheerfully over dinner on the second day of training. "Do you think you can teach me kung fu when we return home?" Suizhou's mouth twists ruefully.
"Ask me again when we get there."
Tangfan catches Qinga smiling into her bowl, then smiling more openly when Dong'ar scoops another ladle of soup into it. The graze on Tangfan's chin is now pink, fresh skin, and the wound on his shoulder no longer pulls painfully when he moves through Jin San's sparring routine. To his great relief, Jin San is softening to Qinga, who watches their training sessions now and offers the occasional tip from the sidelines on how to handle an opponent with martial arts training. Qinga walks with Tangfan when Jin San decides to include some time off horseback in his training, and they both keep pace alongside the carriage, the three of them making conversation. The further north they go, the colder it gets. When snow dusts their bedrolls overnight, they start to pitch tents to sleep under. And the daylight hours are shorter, limiting how far they can travel each day. Still, the hot food and warm clothes keep Tangfan from complaining too much, and moving his body more each day seems to help keep the cold further at bay. Overall, Tangfan is starting to feel the cheerful ease he had anticipated this journey would bring. So, of course, it's then that Wu Yin returns from scouting their path ahead one morning, as they're packing up camp, and says,
"We're being followed."
All eyes turn to him.
"For how long?"
Suizhou asks grimly.
Wu Yin shakes his head. "Not long. Perhaps only since last night. The signs are of an Oirat party."
"What do the Oirats want with Qinga, Gunyang?" Dong'ar asks, an edge of indignation in her tone. "They might not know we have her, or who she is," Tangfan says. "They could just be bandits." Suizhou's mouth purses, displeased and considering.
"Still, they shouldn't know. Even if they are gathering intelligence,
Jinga Gunyang's value to Wangsha lies in her skills at espionage, at being hidden in plain sight. The less intelligence gathered about her now, the better.
A disguise, then? Tangfan asks, looking at Jinga in her usual dark robes, unmistakably feminine in their flow and figure.
I have some spare clothes,
Sui Zhou says, and Tangfan looks at him in surprise. He's frowning at Jinga, his gaze moving over her with professional consideration.
You'll draw less attention dressed as a male kung fu master anyway.
Seeing Jinga dressed in Sui Zhou's clothes makes Tangfan feel odd. Perhaps it's just how ordinary it makes her look. Definitely not like someone most of the capital would clear the streets and crowd Huanyi brothel to catch a glimpse of. A broad-brimmed hat skims low around her brow, further hiding her face from anyone watching. As far away as they'd have to be to surveil them undetected, Jinga would no doubt be unrecognizable to them if they passed her in the street. It's no surprise, really. She was able to lead a double life without detection up until Tang Fan flung himself directly into her shifu's web.
Sui Daga, next time I need new clothes, can I buy men's clothes?
Deng Ar asks thoughtfully as they set off for the day. And Sui Zhou stumbles his launch up into the saddle. Jin San hoots with laughter.
Let's discuss it when the time comes,
Sui Zhou says diplomatically, and Deng Ar gives a pleased nod as if it's a yes. The next morning, when Tang Fan rises early to train with Jin San, it's to find Sui Zhou and Jinga practicing Tai Chi in the fog a little ways away. Snow is falling lightly, further clouding the air in a dreamlike haze, and a string of their dark footprints tether them back to the campsite.
We're more than halfway there,
Wu Yin rumbles at Tangfan's side. Tangfan turns to him, and Wu Yin glances down to meet his eyes.
Jin Sanya said, you will be learning knives next. Here.
He untucks from his belt a short knife in a leather sheath and hands it to Tangfan. Tangfan examines it closely. It's well cared for, the hilt wrapped in dark leather, and the steel crafted with just a hint of tasteful decoration. Strands of braided and beaded red silk swing from the sheath.
It was Aha's,
Wu Yin says shortly, and Tangfan jerks his head up to stare at him, wide-eyed.
Wu Yin,
I don't think she'd believe you were learning to fight if I told her, so I can't say that she'd want you to have it,
Wu Yin admits begrudgingly, smiling a little.
But Aha was generous in life.
Tang Fan feels suddenly close to tears. Dwarla was generous. She had given up everything for Tang Fan. She had given her life, and Tang Fan had never asked her to. His fists clenched tight around the knife. He has the dual urge to throw it far away from him and clutch it close, perhaps even unsheathe it and sink it into himself. But no, he holds it up in both hands, palms open, and bows over it.
Wu Yin, Tangfan thanks you,
he says, voice cracking unexpectedly.
Put it away,
Wu Yin dismisses, though his voice sounds unsteady as well. Tangfan tucks the knife into his belt carefully, next to his bone-jointed chopsticks. Their Oirat followers, in the end, only last a few days, with the most likely scenario being that they decided the party wasn't worth engaging with, whether because of the odds they posed in a fight, Wu Yin's analysis, or that they didn't show signs of possessing intelligence worth taking back to the Oirat tribal leaders, Sui Zhou's interpretation. Tangfan points out that with Deng Ar in their party, and behaving as a relative rather than a servant, they are projecting the image of a traveling family, more than merchants or government agents, which must help avoid any negative attention. Deng Ar is so pleased at that suggestion that she punches Tang Fan's upper arm in excitement.
Ah, Deng Ar, that hurt! He cries. You must be more careful. I am more fragile than you now. Still, he manages to knock Jin San down twice during their training session that evening, for which he receives a round of applause from everyone except Sui Zhou, who is distracted with stirring his pot over the fire. They have been avoiding towns and villages as they travel as much as possible, but when they are a week away from Hutao, they agree that it's safe enough to stop in one of the mid-sized towns on the main road to refill the chaff stores for the horses and augment their own food supplies with some fresh produce. And sleep in a bed, Tang Fan adds to the list exultantly. They choose an inn on the northern outskirts of town and buy rooms for the night with a pouch of silver from Sui Zhou's belt. Not too many. Do not attract attention. One for Qinge and Dong Ar, another for Sui Zhou and Tang Fan. Wu Yan declares he prefers the familiarity of his own bedroll in the stables, so Jin San has a third room to himself. They eat together in the dining room on the ground floor of the inn, a well-lit space with lanterns set around the walls and hanging from the ceiling. The food isn't as good as Sui Zhou's, but Tang Fan is excited at the variety of flavors, textures, and ingredients compared to their usual camp fare. The lamb is especially good, and Tang Fan devours the pieces Sui Zhou helpfully continues to load up his plate with until he has to shake his head and hold his belly with a groan. And the warm light means everyone glows as they face each other around the table, smiling and relaxed. No one looks worse for wear after 3 weeks on the road, just a little grimy, and proper baths will soon fix that. Tang Fan drinks in the company, delighted to be surrounded by friends and well-fed. It's also the first time Tang Fan has drunk wine since Wu Yan's medicinal brew when Tang Fan was wounded. The wine of this town is sweet and potent, and it warms Tang Fan from the inside until he feels it crown his cheeks in a deep flush. When there's nothing left on the table but empty jars, plates, and stripped lamb bones, Tang Fan heaves an enormous sigh of satisfaction and places his hands on the table. My bed is calling, and I can't possibly disappoint it. Sleep well, friends. He wobbles a bit when he pushes himself up from the table, then wobbles some more when he can't stop giggling. He makes sure to keep his steps unsteady deliberately, just for the way Sui Zhou sighs and grips his elbow to help him up the stairs. There's a steaming bath waiting behind a privacy screen when they get to the room, and Tang Fan groans in anticipation at the sight. While the inn has a shared bathhouse, which Wu Yan had indicated he would make full use of, Sui Zhou had arranged for a bath to be brought up to each of the rooms they were renting. Such extravagance was a shield for Jin San's sake, and Tang Fan feels a great fondness towards Sui Zhou for his thoughtfulness. In fact, he is so grateful that Sui Zhou is his Xiongji that he decides to let Sui Zhou have the first bath. Sui Zhou responds to that magnanimous suggestion.
You go first. I'll look at that shoulder and make sure it's clean. No use risking it in dirty water.
Sui Zhou, it's healed! Tang Fan protests. Then, to spite Sui Zhou, he marches out from behind the privacy screen once he's stripped down to just his trousers and socks. See?
Sui Zhou stares at him wide-eyed from where he's sitting on his bed, one boot off and the other halfway there. He blinks rapidly, then finishes removing the second boot, places it neatly next to the first. Before standing, turn around, he says.
Tang Fan drops his grin to swallow and turns around as ordered. Sui Zhou's socked feet are completely silent on the wooden floor, and Tang Fan jumps as Sui Zhou brushes aside Tang Fan's hair with one calloused finger. Tang Fan crosses his arms over his chest.
It's cold, you know, he points out.
His nipples are poking into his forearms, and he squeezes his arms closer and shivers.
Well, is it all right?
I'll remove the stitches when you've finished washing,
Sui Zhou says, and pauses as if he's got more to say.
After a few minutes of silence, Tang Fan looks back at him over his bare shoulder. Guang Chuan? Sui Zhou is staring down at Tang Fan's back with a strange focus.
What is it?
Sui Zhou swallows audibly, darting his eyes up to meet Tang Fan's for a moment. His expression is complicated, with something like shock mixed into it.
You have a scar, he says gruffly,
the tips of his fingers tracing a line on Tang Fan's back.
Here.
Tang Fan's shoulders jerk up, perhaps at the touch or the reminder, the blow Li Zilong dealt him as he let Tang Fan go. Little had Tang Fan known then that the rush of freedom had been anything but. He had still been in Li Zilong's web and deeply under his control, leading Wangshi and Sui Zhou to ruin with his own hubris.
Sui Zhou, so do you,
Tang Fan says petulantly, stepping out of reach and hunching his shoulders.
Maybe soon we will match.
He darts back behind the privacy screen, swallowing hard and taking a deep breath before shoving his trousers down and removing his underclothes, then stepping into the bath as quickly as possible. He can't help but relax in the hot water, even relishing the first painful shock of it until his extremities warm up. He's aware that Sui Zhou is waiting, though, so limits his wallowing and scrubs himself efficiently, leaving his hair for last. Sui Zhou has placed the drying sheet Tang Fan forgot over the top of the privacy screen, and Tang Fan uses it to wring out his hair and towel himself dry before pulling on his underclothes again.
It's a shame we don't have time to clean anything, he calls it out through the screen, slipping just one arm into his undershirt and wrapping the rest of it awkwardly around himself in an attempt to preserve his modesty before stepping out.
He's feeling considerably more sober than he was when he first left the dinner table, and somehow sharing a room with Sui Zhou feels more intimate than sleeping next to him on the ground for the past several weeks has. It feels like they're in a strange, liminal space, and Tang Fan is anxious not to misstep for a change. Sui Zhou is sitting on the bed again, taking stock of the contents of the medical chest. He looks up when Tang Fan emerges, his eyes briefly taking in Tang Fan's state of dress and wet hair before gesturing him over.
Sit.
Tang Fan perches on the edge of the bed next to him and swivels away, offering his exposed shoulder. He tugs his wet hair over his other shoulder to keep it clear of Sui Zhou's work.
Are you warm enough?
Sui Zhou asks, voice low. Tang Fan shrugs and tenses when Sui Zhou places a steadying hand on the top of his shoulder, before relaxing again.
I will be, once you're done.
You should sit in front of the stove to dry your hair before you sleep.
Sui Zhou painstakingly removes the stitches with the tools Pei Huai had the foresight to provide. The sensation is odd. Not painful, but unpleasant. And Tang Fan is glad when it's over.
I'm sorry,
Sui Zhou says, and Tang Fan halts the movement that had him starting to rise from the bed.
For before, I shouldn't have. I should have just checked your wound as promised.
Tang Fan turns to him, feeling his brow tighten. Sui Zhou is looking down at Tang Fan's knees. Tang Fan is unsure how to respond. For all that sincerity is core to Sui Zhou's character, it's not how they tend to communicate. But then, it's usually Tang Fan who's waging sallies at Sui Zhou's defenses, teasing and prodding. It occurs to Tang Fan that Sui Zhou crossing Tang Fan's own boundaries is something that happens rarely, if ever. So perhaps they are talking frankly now, on neutral ground. Tang Fan shrugs his shirt properly onto his shoulder and ties it around his waist. There is nothing to apologize for, he says with sincerity. Something has been bothering him, though. Perhaps now is the time to unravel it, as it seems not unrelated. He struggles to find the right words. You don't like that I'm learning how to fight. Sui Zhou bows his head and his hands clench to fists on his knees
before releasing, seemingly with conscious effort.
It may save your life one day,
he says, as if reciting something he's said many times, though it's the first time Tongfan's heard it. It may save your life one day, Tongfan retorts, and Suizhou's head jerks up in surprise. His expression is pinched with confusion. Or Dongar's life, or Wuyan's, or Jin San's. Or it may prevent 48 Bolongs from being stolen right in front of me. Tongfan grits his teeth and has to look away from Sui Zhou's earnest eyes. It might have saved Dwarla's life. He startles as Sui Zhou's hand lands heavily on his wrist.
Dwarla's death was not your fault, nor was the theft of the Bolongs. Li Zulong
saw me for what I was and made appropriate use of me, Tongfan finishes, trying to keep down the bitterness burning in the back of his throat.
Runqing.
Tongfan stands up at last and plucks a folded sheet from the foot of his own bed before moving to the small stove radiating heat in the corner of the room. You should bathe before the water goes cold. He wraps the blanket around himself and folds himself to the floor, legs crossed. He shakes his hair out to spread over his back before tucking his arm into the blanket as well. Sui Zhou doesn't respond, just follows Tongfan's suggestion and moves silently behind the privacy screen. Tongfan closes his eyes, soaking in the heat at his back as he listens to the sound of Sui Zhou slowly undressing, then stepping into the water, then the faint melodic splashes as he washes himself. Tongfan makes sure to get into bed before Sui Zhou reemerges from behind the screen, facing the wall and bundled thoroughly in the clean bedding. Lao Shi, shall we train? Tongfan asks the next morning, when he finds Jin San standing on the front steps of the inn, staring out into the dim morning light. Jin San turns to him with a curious look on his face.
I'm too young for Lao Shi, he says, rubbing his nose. Although, his tone is begrudging, you've made enough progress that perhaps one day soon you will be my equal.
Tongfan grins, nearly vibrating on the spot. Jin Xiong, then? Jin San says gruffly, nodding once.
Jin Xiong will do.
He looks up to meet Tongfan's eyes, searching.
If Tongxiong accepts.
Tongfan grins, delighted. Tongxiong accepts. They eat hot congee with dried fruits for breakfast in the inn dining room, though Tongfan finds it hard to focus on his food because Sui Zhou is conspicuously missing. As they're saddling up the horses to leave again, he reappears with his arms full, then proceeds to hand out fur-lined vests to everyone but Wuyan, who's already wearing his own.
It will get even colder the further north we go,
Sui Zhou explains, helping Dongar slip her arms through her dark furred vest. When he approaches Tongfan, he holds out his hand.
Your cloak, he says gruffly.
Tongfan hands it over, bemused, and takes the vest Sui Zhou offers in return, shrugging it on swiftly. It fits perfectly, of course. Sui Zhou has taken a seat on the front board of the carriage and is leaning over Tongfan's cloak. When Tongfan approaches, curiously, with an expert swiftness, Sui Zhou is lacing on a sheepskin collar around the neck of the cloak, through the eyelets that Tongfan has always been curious about the use for. When Sui Zhou finishes, he stands briskly and sweeps the cloak over Tongfan's shoulders, arranging the plush sheepskin and clipping the front closed so it sits snugly against Tongfan's neck. It's so soft and warm with the faint, comforting scent of lanolin sneaking from it whenever Tongfan moves.
There,
Sui Zhou says, looking at it with a closed-lipped smile, pleased, if somewhat reserved. Tongfan blinks after him as Sui Zhou walks away, watching as he pulls on a fur vest of his own before mounting his horse. Tinga steers her mount towards Tongfan's as he hauls himself up into his own saddle.
She's wearing Sui Jo's green, quilted robes today, her hair constrained in a high bun, and the wide-brimmed hat shielding her face as usual. She tips the brim up a little to meet Tong Fan's eyes and raises her eyebrow. Tong Fan blinks back at her. Chinga's lips press together as if she's holding back a laugh.
Sui Bai Hu is very generous, she observes.
Tong Fan agrees. He can afford it. Both of Chinga's eyebrows shoot up for a moment.
And such excellent taste.
Tong Fan finds that his hand has risen to stroke the lush fleece around his neck, as if it's a treasured pet. He sniffs. I suppose, though you wouldn't think it of someone who decorates his house with his military armor and weapon collection. Chinga laughs aloud this time, and they ride in companionable silence as they make their way out of the small town on the northern road, listening to Dong Er chattering to Sui Jo ahead of them.
I would like very much to see your house one day,
Chinga says softly after some time has passed. Tong Fan looks at her. Her expression is complicated, wistfulness and resolve. He's about to reassure her that of course they will welcome her any time, but it swiftly occurs to him that it's a promise he can't make. Her fate, as soon as they reach Hetao, will be in Wang Shi's hands. She may never leave again. The last week of their journey passes swiftly, the landscape settling into prairies, carpeted with snow. The road is well-trod, though, muddy from hooves and cartwheels. Hetao is not the remote military station Liaodong was, but a town large enough to have a governor. The military presence is still strong, though. As they make their way through the outskirts of town, they pass patrols of soldiers on their way out, and what seem like a number of higher-ranking officers on horseback. Wu Yin leads them towards an inn, not quite in the center of town. He and Jin San arrange for the stabling of the horses and storage of the carriage.
I'm going to find Wang Shi, Sui Jo says to the rest of them quietly.
He nods towards Dong Er, handing her a clinking pouch.
Get us some rooms.
I'm coming with you, Tong Fan says hurriedly. I've come all this way. I'm not waiting. Sui Jo's mouth twitches, faintly amused, and he nods briefly. It's strange, walking instead of being on horseback. Stranger still is being surrounded by people again, by the sounds and smells of civilization, buildings looming in on all sides and carriages crowding them off the roads. Tong Fan perks up like a dog that's caught a scent when he hears the familiar call of Tong Hulu from up ahead. Moments later, he has a stick of ruby-bright candied hawthorn in his hand, and Sui Jo's coin purse is a little lighter. Guang Chuan, I love your soup, but this is so good. Do you want some? Tong Fan holds the stick towards him, licking sticky red candy off his lips and smiling. Sui Jo looks at him for a moment.
No, thank you.
Ah, all the more for me, Tong Fan returns, taking another bite. They have just made it within sight of the fort at the center of the town when Jia Kui materializes in front of them, several paces ahead. He looks at each of them in turn, expression blank, then tilts his head a little to lead them into a side alley. Sui Jo holds Tong Fan back from following too closely, and they keep pace with him at a distance as they leave the bustle of the main streets behind. They're skirting the high walls of the fort, Tong Fan realizes, being led slowly closer to it, but away from the main entrance. At last, Jia Kui pauses in front of a small square archway in the side of the wall, then glances back to make eye contact before ducking inside. Sui Jo hustles Tong Fan across the brief open space between buildings, his hand light between Tong Fan's shoulders. Unexpectedly, the archway turns into a torchlit tunnel, which leads to a heavy, iron-barred gate that's standing open for them. Tong Fan eyes it warily, but Sui Jo doesn't pause,
and they pass through it to descend a long set of stone stairs. Then a chamber is opening out in front of them, stone walls curving above, braziers set about, and torches bracketed on the walls. It's not a pleasant room. If anything, it reminds Tong Fan of the dungeons of the Northern Imperial Guard and the Western Depot. But he supposes that isn't surprising. Wang Xie is sitting at a plain wooden table in the center of the room, smiling, with Jia Kui standing blank-faced behind him.
Tong Daren, Sui Daren,
Wang Xie says cheerfully and gestures broadly.
Please, sit down.
Is that the way you greet your friends who have traveled across the country, risking their lives to run to the aid of yours? Tong Fan grouses, taking a seat at the table next to Sui Zhou.
Wang Xie's expression sobers a little, and he raises his arms to bow towards them.
Wang Xie is indeed very grateful to have friends such as these.
Tong Fan sniffs, mollified. You're still alive, then? Wang Xie lowers his hands to rest gracefully in his lap.
I am.
And still carrying out your business in places such as this. Tong Fan glances at their surroundings, scowling.
In present circumstances, it is the safest place for us to meet.
And what are the present circumstances?
Sui Zhou interjects softly. Wang Xie dips his head towards Sui Zhou in acknowledgement.
When we first arrived, there were attempts made on my life. A poisoning, a stabbing, a spooked horse.
Jia Kui's presence at Wang Xie's back isn't outwardly acknowledged, but each person at the table knows why the attempts failed.
Since then, they have at least learned some subtlety. I have an ally in the military, but we suspect they know this well enough to recruit civilian agents in the conspiracy.
Do you have evidence? Tong Fan asks.
Wang Xie nods.
Ding Rong was approached for intelligence. They managed to get into the fort's dungeons, but he didn't identify them as military men from their manner and bearing.
And you believe him? Tong Fan asks, skeptical.
Wang Xie inclines his head, acknowledging Tong Fan's doubt.
I do. His motivation was never for my downfall, only for his own elevation, which is now unavailable to him in any form.
Tong Fan huffs lightly. There is always torture, as you well know.
He's been moved into my residence for the time being, Wang Xie says. It's a gilded cell, but a cell just the same. He won't be sharing any intelligence there, willingly or unwillingly.
Chingo waits in the Falling Leaves Inn, Sui Zhou says. We were ambushed on our way out of the capital, so someone there knows she's no longer imprisoned in the Northern Imperial Guard. We weren't followed out of the city, though, and kept out of towns as we traveled. She was disguised for much of it.
Wang Xie nods, taking in the information.
My military contact says there are Oirat scouts further south, paying attention to who is using the roads.
Sui Zhou nods in return.
We were followed for a few days, but they didn't engage.
Very good. I will visit you at the Falling Leaves Inn after your evening meal tonight. There is a large room towards the back of the building on the second floor that I advise you rent.
Tong Fan raises his eyebrows. That's it? You're not going to show us your home? The corner of Wang Xie's mouth lifts up.
Chinga Gunyang will never step foot in my residence, and her work will be all the more effective because of it. Once she has taken up her new duties, I will, of course, welcome my friends from the capital with open arms.
Good, Tong Fan says, troubled. Deng Ar is looking forward to beating you at Go again. Wang Xie's smile this time is swift and genuine.
Ah, it will be much easier to play in the same room, rather than a move per letter. Please let her know I will have her favorite snacks prepared.
I would almost think you have missed her more than you have missed us, Tong Fan accuses, feeling the hint of a scowl. And Wang Xie laughs.
Tong Fan.
Sui Zhou rests his hand briefly on Tong Fan's forearm.
Later, when we're all together. Sui Zhou stands, Tang Fan rising after him.
My apologies, Tang Daren. I will make sure to provide a proper welcome next time you visit,
Wang Xia says, some genuine warmth in his tone as he stands as well. Sui Zhou bows formally, and Tang Fan follows his lead.
It's good to see you are well, Wang Xiefu,
Sui Zhou says, smiling softly. Wang Xia bows back.
And you as well, he says. Please watch for any unwanted observers as you make your way back to the inn, and stay out of sight as much as you can until the commencement of your official visit.
Sui Zhou nods once more in acknowledgement, and leads the way as he and Tang Fan leave the unpleasant chamber, ascending the stairs and emerging from the tunnel into the crisp night air. They stay silent until the inn is within sight, snow crunching quietly underfoot. Then Tang Fan mutters sourly,
He seems perfectly content to me. I don't see what the hurry was for.
Sui Zhou gives a soft huff of amusement.
Since when have you been able to read Wang Shi?
Tang Fan frowns, unable to counter Sui Zhou's challenge.
You are hardly a Wang Shi expert yourself, he retorts, pouting.
Sui Zhou tips his head in acknowledgement.
I don't claim to be, but I do not always accept what I see at face value.
It stings. For all that the stakes of the conversation are low, Sui Zhou's words jab right into where Tang Fan is still smarting, wounded by Li Zulong's easy manipulation of him. He can't answer Sui Zhou, just lengthens his stride to pull forward and away from him, and up the steps of the inn.
Deng Er and Wu Yin are at one of the dining tables, a great heap of roasted lamb on a platter in front of them. From the piles of bones, they have worked through a considerable serving already.
Tang Fan hurries to sit down, shrugging his cloak back ungracefully and reaching for the meat.
Did you see Wang Daga, Tang Daga?
Deng Er asks eagerly. Sui Zhou has caught up and rests his hand briefly on Deng Er's shoulder, making a gesture for her to keep her voice low when she looks at him. Deng Er gives a tiny nod, and Sui Zhou smiles, taking a seat next to her.
We will have visitors this evening, he says softly,
and her face bursts into an excited smile.
Did you rent the large room on the second floor of the inn?
Deng Er says, surprised. All the others were too small, and there weren't enough left for us to have one each for ourselves.
Good, Sui Zhou says.
Guang Chuan, you should eat,
Tang Fan suggests.
The lamb is good.
They spend the remainder of the day resting, though it makes Tang Fan fidgety to not be immediately out on the streets, gathering intelligence. This is Wang Shi's territory. They have to defer to his better judgment of the situation. Instead, Tang Fan plays an extremely disappointing game of Go with Qingge, while Wu Yin and Sui Zhou clean and sharpen their weapons. Deng Er, meanwhile, has recruited Jin San to transport their enormous pile of dirty clothing to a laundry house across town. Of all of their party, the two of them are the least likely to be recognized. They return in the early evening, bringing enough street food back for all of them to take a meal in the big upstairs room. And it's good enough that Tang Fan is distracted from his restlessness until Wang Shi arrives. A light knock on the door heralds Wang Shi's arrival. Sui Zhou opens the door, and before Wang Shi has even opened his mouth to provide a sardonic greeting, his face is flushed clean by surprise as Deng Er launches herself at him, wrapping her arms around his chest. It shocks Tang Fan to see how much Deng Er has grown over the last year. She's nearly as tall as Wang Shi now. But he can't help but grin, delighted at the awkward pat Wang Shi gives her shoulder before she releases him again.
Wang Daga, we finally get to visit you,
she says with hushed excitement. He smiles, producing a paper bag. Her eyes light up.
This is the local candy. I think you'll enjoy it.
Jia Kui closes the door quietly behind them,
And Sui Zhou gestures them towards the table where Tong Fan and Qinga already sit. Qinga's expression is one of polite repose, as neutral as any Tong Fan ever saw while she played the zither at Huanyi Brothel. But her eyes are fixed fast on Wang Shi.
Wang Daren,
she greets as he sits down, bowing.
Qingunyang,
Wang Shi acknowledges.
We have much to discuss.
They talk through matters late into the night, coming up with short-term plans and medium-term strategies. The next day or two, Qinga will part from them and find her own place to live in Hetao, with the allowance Wang Shi will provide her. She will then undertake intelligence gathering for him as required, at present digging out the roots of the conspiracy that he and Jia Kui have seen the tendrils of. There is a popular brothel in town. It is up to her own discretion if she wishes to make use of it as a place to source information. Tong Fan and Sui Zhou's investigation expertise will not be required.
The most valuable thing right now is stealth,
Wang Shi says calmly, at Tong Fan's outraged expression.
Besides, when you are my welcome guests, all eyes will be on you and the expectations you bring. This will serve to detract any attention from Qinga Gunyang.
It makes sense, Tong Fan has to grumpily admit. He'd been looking forward to solving a case, though. It itched under his skin, spending so long without the stimulation of a puzzle to solve. What about Wu Yin? He points out.
Wu Yin Bulaga can do as he likes,
Wang Shi says.
Whether he chooses to associate with you or his fellow Orats, neither should draw much attention. Many of the Hans here have made good bedfellows with the Orats and Hetao.
He smirks without humor.
As long as he stays away from Qinga.
While Tong Fan and Sui Zhou and Dong Ar are to stay in Wang Shi's residence as honored guests, upon being asked, Jin San chooses to stay at the Fallen Leaves Inn, preferring to steer clear of what he knows is just going to end badly, as he puts it. Wu Yin similarly has a lack of interest in staying under Wang Shi's roof, with so much of his own land and culture at his feet. Their party is separating. I'm sure we'll talk again before we return to the capital, Tong Fan says anxiously, as Qinga carefully folds Sui Zhou's clothes to return them, having purchased her own simple garb. Nothing like the fine robes of Huanyi Brothel, but a strange, indeterminate mix of Han and Oirat styles. All Tong Fan could tell from looking at her is that she is not a wealthy woman, which is in itself a disguise, given the size of the coin purse he saw Wang Shi give her. Qinga smiles at him, fond with a touch of sadness.
Thank you, Tong Daren,
she says, her tone rich with sincerity.
I hope we are able to see each other again.
Tong Fan's heart feels squeezed tight, too high in his chest. He watches as she leaves, disappearing too soon into the crowd. Wang Shi's residence is as fine as one would expect of a governor in a border town, spacious but functional, though with small touches of opulence that are rare enough to have a personal feel. Tong Fan wonders if they are mementos of Wang Shi's time serving in the Forbidden Palace. He is surprised to see Ding Rong rising to greet them as they enter Wang Shi's dining room. He's dressed more simply than Tong Fan has ever seen him, aside from through the bars of the cage as Wang Shi left the capital, and his cheeks look hollow, face drawn. It is odd seeing him without a futon. Tong Fan feels almost embarrassed looking at his bare hair. Wang Shi doesn't comment on his presence, though. Tong Fan supposes he was being genuine, if incredibly subtle, when he said that Ding Rong never wished him harm. There is another guest at the table who stands to greet them, and Tong Fan takes only a moment to recall where he's seen his face before.
Chun Yongjun,
Sui Zhou beats him to it, bowing formally. Wang Shi gestures for them all to sit.
Chen Yue gives Dong Er a curious look when she hurries to take a seat next to Wangxia, before turning to them.
Welcome to Hetao, Sui Baihu. Sui Baihu, Tang Daren, Dong Gunyang.
Dong Er's head whips around to look at him, where he's seated on the opposite side of Wangxia, and Tang Fan can see her preen.
Chen Jiangjun did such valuable work for the emperor with his management of the military at Liaodong. His Majesty has reassigned him to Hetao to continue his exemplary work here,
Wangxia explains. Tang Fan's eyes dart to Chen Yue. His expression seems relaxed enough, if a bit bemused by Wangxia's well-crafted words. The fact that he's revealing that at all is perhaps a sign enough that he is here as a friend, not a potential enemy. Wang Xie's contact in the military is not simply a sympathetic officer, but the general overseeing the installment, and is already comfortable dining in Wang Xie's home. Tang Fan glances to Sui Zhou to gauge his reaction. Sui Zhou meets his eyes calmly, giving nothing away. The food is excellent.
I had these dishes prepared especially for you, Tang Daren,
Wangxia says smugly.
I mentioned a chef in my letters that I asked to write down recipes for Sui Daren.
He gestures towards the open door of the dining room, and a maid approaches, bowing as she offers a book to Tang Fan.
I employ him now.
Tang Fan wipes his hands off hurriedly to take the book, then flicks through it, eyes roving the pages hungrily. Despite the abundance of food in front of him already, the recipes make his stomach growl.
Wangxia, this is surely the best gift I have ever received!
He hands the book to Dong Er in response to her grasping hands. Wangxia laughs high and loud.
Surely, Tang Daren, the greatest gift is Sui Daren cooking the dishes for you?
Tang Fan glances to Sui Zhou, a little sheepish. To his surprise, Sui Zhou is frowning faintly. Tang Fan was expecting his usual long-suffering irritation, but the hint of tension in his brow is different. Tang Fan takes a gulp of his wine.
Ah, Wangxia is right as always. Tang Fan is very fortunate, he says hurriedly.
Sui Zhou doesn't return his gaze.
Wang Daga, can we use your kitchen while we're here?
Dong Er says excitedly, her meal neglected as she continues to page through the book.
My home is yours,
Wangxia says expansively, and Dong Er beams. It's an odd anticlimax, arriving in Hetao and having little to do. At Wangxia's welcoming meal, he had laid all their current leads on the table, allowing them to work through it, theoretically, even if they can't roam the streets for clues. Even Ding Rong had some valid theories. Tang Fan was surprised to note. Part of him had been expecting Ding Rong to sit silent through the discussion, downcast and ashamed. But he was just as eager as the rest of them to understand who might be plotting Wangxia's downfall. Still, that is the extent to which Wangxia will let them work on the case, absorbing their ideas and theories with a serious expression and giving nothing back. Tang Fan pesters him about it every time they share a meal over the next week, but Wangxia remains good-natured and immovable. They've been in Hetao for 10 days. Tang Fan is lingering in his room, trying to craft a letter to Tang Yu that is reassuring, informational, but also lacking in any sensitive information whatsoever, when there's a light knock on his door. Enter, he calls out, voice flat with boredom, and brightens immediately when Sui Zhou steps into the room. He's dressed for riding. Are you going somewhere? Tang Fan asks eagerly. I will come with you.
Yes, Sui Zhou says. He looks a little uncertain of himself. I have something to do. It will take me out of town for a few days. I was hoping you would join me.
A case?
Tang Fan launches to his feet, darting over to where his pack is and starting to shove things back into it.
What is it? Where is it? What do you know?
Suecho holds out a calming hand.
It's more of an errand. I can tell you more about it when we're on the road.
Something secret, then. Tongfan is brimming with excitement. Have you packed food already? Can you make the lamb stew from Wangsha's book?
Yes and yes. Suecho is smiling now. I will meet you in the stables in half an hour.
Tongfan hurries to light a joss stick as Suecho backs out the door again. Within the hour, they're riding out of town, Tongfan relishing being back on a horse, a way a past version of himself would never have believed.
Have you been training since we left Jinsan at the inn? Suecho asks as they ride, eyeing the dagger at Tongfan's belt.
Tongfan nods. Dongar and I practiced together. I thought we were improving, but one morning she invited Jia Kui to test us. Now, I'm not so sure.
He winces at the memory. If you need a sparring partner, I'm here. Suecho says simply, and Tongfan's head whips around to stare.
Guangchuan Xiong, really?
Tongfan's heart lightens to see Suecho's small smile as he nods.
You should be careful, though. If you ask me to stab you now, you might really get hurt.
I trust your needlework, Suecho says simply,
and a giggle surges up from Tongfan's fluttering belly, surprising him.
It's not until they are well out of town and the sun is shifting lower ahead of them in the west that Suecho explains where they are going.
When I was a Zhongtui, one of my cases was to find a former Baihu of the Imperial Guard who had fled his post during the war.
Tongfan frowns.
So long after the end of the war? Had others been looking?
Suecho nods, his eyes fixed on the snowy trail ahead of them. His breath steams in the air as he speaks.
They had, for a long time. Others had found him before, but they weren't able to capture him. His fighting skills were too good.
Tongfan feels his eyes narrow. In the back of his mind, some of his senses uncurl. That feeling that he's on the edge of putting something together.
They weren't just hunting him because he abandoned his post, he says, not even making it a question.
Suecho glances sideways at him, a huff of steam as he sighs, shaking his head.
He looks back to the trail. He killed his commanding general.
Tongfan's eyebrows shoot up. Given the circumstances of telling this story, he suspects that is not all there is to it.
Why?
Suecho frowns.
The official report is that he resented his assignment, had had enough of living rough on the front lines of the war. He ignored the general's commands, and they fought.
And the unofficial report?
Another white-clouded sigh. The general was colluding with the Oirats, most likely for financial gain. They were playing him for intelligence. And to ensure that when his soldiers went to battle with the Oirats, they went in with strategies that couldn't possibly lead them to victory. When his attempts to report the corruption to the Minister of War failed, the Baihu confronted the general. A last-ditch attempt to prevent him from marching the battalion to their deaths.
Tongfan swallows, thinking of the festering wound of corruption amongst the highest ministers that had been bared to the light of day when Li Zilong executed his coup. A part of him feels a deep sorrow that Suezhou's story isn't shocking to him, where once it would have been. Though he can't miss the person he was, someone naive enough to cause real danger.
Jia Kui, Tongfan concludes soberly, and Suecho nods, his expression dark.
You brought him in.
Suecho glances at him, and Tongfan thinks he sees regret there. I was different back then.
They ride in silence for a few beats. Tongfan watches the white clouds of his breath puff out, only to get snatched away by the chill wind.
You wouldn't bring him in if you were asked to today?
Suecho frowns.
I would do things differently.
He's troubled. Tongfan doesn't push. So how does this relate to your errand, Guangchuan? He asks lightly. Suecho looks off into the distance,
drags his teeth over his lower lip as he huffs out a breath.
He has a family, a wife, and a young son. When Wangsha took him out of prison to work for him, Jia Kui asked me to take them money and tell them to move on, that he had died.
He has a family? Tang Fan asks, surprised at last. You knew this before you brought him in.
Sui Zhou nods, shoulders hunching a little as he does so. His son was there.
Tang Fan sucks in a breath. He holds it to look at Sui Zhou from the corner of his eyes, observing the way he's holding himself as if bracing for a blow, one that he believes he deserves.
So, you are still bringing the money, then? Tang Fan says, voice gentle.
Sui Zhou's posture shifts, clear relief that makes Tang Fan feel a little uneasy, because Sui Zhou was right to brace himself for Tang Fan's verbal lashing. Once, Tang Fan wouldn't have hesitated to hold back when it came to lauding principles he believed shouldn't be compromised.
Yes, and to verify their well-being. And I thought...
He glances at Tang Fan, something complicated in his eyes.
If something happens to me, it's important that someone else knows where they are.
Tang Fan blinks. Wait, Jia Kui doesn't know where they are?
Sui Zhou shakes his head. He wanted them to believe he was dead, to sever all contact, all possibility that they could find each other again. There was too much risk. They could be used so easily against him.
Against Wang Shi, Tang Fan says darkly. Sui Guang Chuan, Tang Fan says, then stops. He doesn't know what to say first, how to detangle the threads of his thoughts, fusing together with the heat of his outrage. The Jia Kui believes he can never see his family again because of his servitude to Wang Shi. That Jia Kui's family believes he is dead, that they are, in fact, less than 2 days' ride from each other. And, most abhorrently, that Sui Zhou would suggest that he might die and leave Tang Fan with this responsibility of knowledge all on his own.
Tang Fan, Sui Zhou says hesitantly into the long pause.
Tang Fan shakes his head, trying to clear it. Well, I suppose we will have to find a way to reunite them, he says firmly.
Tang Fan.
Sui Zhou's tone has changed to desperation, though he tightens his jaw as he continues, Imperial Guard tone coming out.
It's unsafe, and it's against Jia Kui's wishes.
What about his family's wishes?
They would wish for him to be safe,
Sui Zhou answers immediately.
Even if they knew he was alive, they would understand. If they were endangered in order to manipulate him, that would be more harmful to him than death itself.
Tang Fan frowns. Mostly when they argue, Sui Zhou is immovable and unchanging as a stone wall, and sometimes Tang Fan can make him crumble. This time, Sui Zhou is as thin and vulnerable as paper. Instead of fighting, he's trying to convince Tang Fan. Tang Fan sighs, unsettled. Who do they think you are, then? Sensing Tang Fan backing off, Sui Zhou's posture seems to soften a little.
They believe that I served with him in the military and want to make sure his family is taken care of. There's no one else from his battalion who would do the same, so no risk that the lie will be uncovered.
Tang Fan feels a sudden, desperate sadness. It hadn't occurred to him that someone could be so alone and appear so impervious. He remembers one of the few times he saw a hint of softness, of feeling from Jia Kui. When he had escorted Deng Ar and Tang Fan back to the capital from Yunhe, disguised as beggars. It had been an assignment given to him by Wang Shi, but Tang Fan hadn't imagined the genuineness of his care. What had happened after that? Had Jia Kui gone back to his own living quarters, alone, no family to greet him, no meal ready on the table?
I just ask you go along with me on this, Runqing,
Sui Zhou says softly.
Please, don't tell them anything.
Tang Fan looks at him. Sui Zhou is gazing earnestly back,
his expression vulnerable. The prairies stretch out behind him, bleak with snow, the matte gray sky merging with it at the horizon. Thoughts manifest in Tang Fan's mind unbidden. Who welcomed Sui Zhou home before Dong Er and Tang Fan moved in? When the war ended and he himself left the military, who made sure he was eating? Of course, Tang Fan replies, his voice softer than he anticipated. The gratitude in the look Sui Zhou gives him makes him feel almost sick with guilt that he had engendered such anxiety. Tang Fan clears his throat and nudges his heels into his horse. It snorts and trots forward a few lengths before regaining its steady walking pace. Sui Zhou urges his horse to catch up, closing the distance between them smoothly. How much longer? Tang Fan asks.
We'll stop for the night soon, and reach them at the next settlement mid-morning.
I hope you know how to construct a good tent, Tang Fan says, wrapping his cloak more tightly around him, the fleece collar snug around his neck and jaw.